Incarcerated people across America and parts of Canada are striking this week, pointing to what they say are inhumane conditions inside prisons.
The strike is expected to go through early September, and it comes in reaction to rioting at a corrections facility in South Carolina 4 months ago that left seven inmates dead.
Nicole Gonzalez-Van Cleve is an associate professor at the University of Delaware in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice. She researches the criminal justice system. Nicole, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
These protests are taking place across the country and, like we said, even in parts of Canada as well. It's difficult to know how big they've gotten, but can you help us understand why these protests are happening and why it's a widespread movement?
Right. Well, we've heard as many as 17 states might be participating, but I think the scope is very difficult to tell. And I think one of the issues is that people on the inside are often subjected to brutal, inhumane conditions, are often terrified to speak out against abuses of power, denial of food, denial of medical care. And those types of things. And I think there are some, you know, advocacy groups that are helping people on the inside voice their displeasure, voice the types of abuses that they endure. Some of the demands that they're talking about is just the quality of life that they are subjected to on a daily basis, the punitive nature of the criminal justice system, giving grossly punitive sentences for what in some cases should be small crimes that allow people to rehabilitate themselves and then go back into society. And then also the labor issues that are happening within prisons, where people are working in many cases arduous, dangerous jobs with really no promise of getting more than $2 a day for this really dangerous work. And often the salary goes back into them basically buying things out of commissary that are just basic, toiletries or extra additional snacks or things to help them not be hungry while in prison. And so this is kind of the basic thing. It shows that, you know, some of these conditions, well, you know, every state is different, every location is different. Some of the issues of humanity and the oppressive nature of prisons and jails is kind of has a common quality across many jurisdictions.
We heard from Shannon on Facebook. She says that we treat prisoners horribly, and she adds the systemic inequality is as plain as day. And it sounds like those comments really echo what the prisoners themselves are saying.
Yes. And I think one of the really difficult things is, you know, when you're on the inside, you are removed from society. It is assumed that you're dangerous. You're put with a criminal label. But we know, especially in jails, a lot of the people serving time, for instance, are nonviolent drug addicted offenders. And I think it's easy to, you know, when they're cast away, just say, well, they must have deserved it. They must have done something to be there, and then not really scrutinize what's happening on the inside. And that becomes, I don't know, I think the rationale for why officials and many of the sheriffs that run these prisons are allowed in some ways to go unchecked in how they run the prisons on a day-to-day basis, right? You have people that are reformers. You have people in Chicago, for instance, like Tom Dart, who are running and saying that they are reforming prisons and jails to make them more humane. But it really, the proof is in the pudding. How do people live on a day-to-day basis? And what you see is a ton of suffering.
We talked previously on the show about kind of the history of American criminal justice and incarceration, and it seems that at various points in history there has been some emphasis on rehabilitation, but that we are in an era right now where it's very, very punitive. And it seems like a lot of the demands that the people who are striking have are related to, what about when we get out? We are not getting right. The opportunity for education or basically to learn how to reintegrate into society.
Right. I mean, you know, again, there's this, to me, this contradiction, this paradox, if you will, maybe hypocrisy of what reformers or in some times officials are saying, right? Well, we provide education services, or we provide in some cases small little reform programs where they put 25 people in yoga and teach them meditation. But that is not systemic change, right? Those are band-aids on larger problems. And so in California, this became extremely visible when you had inmates that were in some ways kind of forced to help work on these massive fires, you know, deadly fires that were, in some ways destroying communities. And you had these inmates on the front line paid $2 a day. Now, the hypocrisy comes that after these inmates are set free, They're not allowed to use these skills in the quote unquote real world. They are not allowed to be firefighters. They're not allowed to train. Disenfranchisement and their criminal, quote unquote, criminal label makes it so that is a job that is not able for, you know, that they don't have access to. So therein lies the hypocrisy. If it was really reform and rehabilitatively oriented, you would have job training so that people have a future after they are allowed to be free. And I think the assumption by, you know, much of the public is that we have that forgiveness plan, but in many cases we don't, and we don't have it even for nonviolent offenders.
We're talking right now with Nicole Gonzalez-Van Cleve. She's an associate professor at the University of Delaware in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice. We're talking about the strikes that are happening across the U.S. and in Canada among prisoners demanding more humane treatment while they are incarcerated. And Nicole, you know, being incarcerated obviously means having your actions and your activities closely monitored and closely regulated. So what kind of tactics do the prisoners have to be able to show their displeasure, to make their demands, and to be on strike?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, this really is an act of bravery, because I believe, you know, from the work that I've done, I've studied a lot in Chicago. I was getting my PhD at Northwestern University, and I started a large study of both the court system, but I was also able to see the proximity of the jail, because inmates are brought into the court with the sheriffs right there. And you see in some ways the abuses kind of seeping into the court. You get an indication of what life might be like. 2 years ago, Illinois Supreme Court judge was in bond court and saw a mentally ill woman brought out in a garbage bag. She was arrested in her underwear, and they only gave her the dignity, if you will, of letting her wear a garbage bag. And I think, you know, and the other thing is recently there's a new lawsuit against the Cook County sheriffs that they are saying that, you know, the class action is claiming that they've been videoing inmates while they're in the bathroom, male and female, with guards present, and they have no privacy. So I just want to emphasize to the listeners that any type of protest, if you will, on the act, on behalf of people on the inside is a brave act. Many of them are doing hunger strikes. Many of them are refusing to work. And trust me, if you're on the inside, working is actually a way to cope with the long years that you might have. So in some respects, work is an important way of surviving. But the type of abusive practices of not paying people is, I think, what they're protesting. It's really the activist that's trying to help many inmates on the inside be able to communicate these wishes to the outside world. But it really depends on the type of correctional institution that you're in. There are some folks that have access to more, you know, preachers and religious leaders and activists and teachers and professors. So here, the Greaterford Prison in Philadelphia has a lot of resources. In Illinois, it's very different. And for instance, people were trying to smuggle my book into the Cook County Jail and ripping off the covers and almost using a book like contraband, meaning they're so desperate for education, they're so desperate for information that they wanted that book to be in their hands. So again, it varies. It varies about how much access people have to be able to protest. But that's why it's really difficult to tell that is it actually 17 states that are protesting, or is the scope much bigger? And we just are unable to, in some ways, get access to those on the inside that are trying to make a difference and trying to communicate with the outside world about the plight of these conditions.
We're talking right now with Nicole Gonzalez-Van Cleve about a prisoner strike that's underway across the United States and parts of Canada. It's planned to last for several weeks. She's an associate professor at the University of Delaware in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice.
And we want to hear from you, too, at 800-642-1234. What do you think about conditions at our jails and prisons? Do you want to see them improved? What kinds of reforms do you think should be made to the criminal justice system, if any? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
We're continuing our conversation about a nationwide prisoner strike that's underway. Our guest is Nicole Gonzalez-Van Cleve. She's an associate professor at the University of Delaware in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. 1234. Have you or a loved one been incarcerated? If so, what was your experience? Do you think we should prioritize improving the treatment of incarcerated people? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Melvin on Facebook said, prisons should have self-sustaining work, such as farms with livestock and spaces for gardening. He also says luxury items like a weight room should be removed, but a library and school area should be open for a few hours a day for those wanting to educate themselves. And Nicole, one of the things I want to ask is, as you said, it's different in every state, but are there any overall requirements of prisons to what the, in what they provide for people that are incarcerated there?
You know, I mean, many of the prisons, they will go under federal oversight if the conditions don't improve. So, for instance, in Chicago, when the prison population or the jail population reached 10,000 people, they were under federal supervision that they had to downsize. So in that respect, I mean, again, there's constant, they're constantly under scrutiny, if you will. But I, you know, again, with the education system, I mean, that is kind of at the whim, the political whim of governors, state by state. And so in some states you do see, you know, in Pennsylvania, I was quite surprised when I came out here and I was able to go to the Graterford Prison and I was able to give a guest lecture. They had Michelle Alexander and other scholars, Cornell West, and they had a really vibrant education system for even people that had life sentences here. So they could actually become, get a BA from Villanova University, for instance, or even a master's. And so to me, that felt, it gave the people on the inside purposeful work. In many cases, the people on the inside were mentoring young men. This was a men's prison, on how to not come back, right? So they had a whole intervention system. So some of these men with, you know, serving life were in some ways serving life, meaning cultivating goodness and reform in their fellow inmates. And to me, that was something I had never seen. I'm so used to Illinois prisons that didn't have those types of resources when I was researching them, that you could really just see this vast difference in what some prisons were willing to do and what other prisons were, you know, engaging in vast deprivation, if you will.
Let's go to the phones, and Michael in Milwaukee is up. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I just wanted to give my insight as to being a formerly incarcerated person. When I heard about the prison strike, I had mixed feelings. Like, the people that are striking, I think, will be retaliated against heavily, and it'll last a long time into their sentence that they stood up for themselves. The prison system does not want you to make waves against what's going on against you. I felt like the DOC stands for the Department of Corruption because of the way they suppress any kind of your ability to access the outside world, your ability to fight against their corruption. If you file internal complaints, They will retaliate against you in roundabout ways by denying you programming and educational things and jobs. So I'm power to the guys that are standing up for themselves, but I feel for the way that they're going to be retaliated against.
And Michael, before we let you go, I wanted to ask, first of all, thank you for those insights. What has it been for you like as you came out of prison and reintegrated into your community?
It's very difficult. You know, I was a hard-working guy that got caught up with alcohol abuse, and before I let my life slip into that mistake, I was doing well. And then, you know, to be put in the prison system for a drug or alcohol problem, I think it's ridiculous. You should go into rehabilitation programs. You should go into treatment. It's any sentence that you get, it ends up being a life sentence in a lot of ways, because if you can imagine not having a paycheck for 1 or 2 weeks, imagine not having a paycheck for years. You're forever going to be behind the eight ball. I lost my house, I lost the business, vehicles, and I don't know how I'll ever recover that. I'm doing my best. I'm back in school trying to, you know, reinvent myself, but still I have to go try and explain what I did the last several years, and it's just going to be difficult, but you know, I'm a fighter. So,
Michael, thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm guessing, Nicole, that resonates with you.
It does, because Michael is definitely not alone. I think he sounds like a spokesperson for a lot of a large national problem, which is mass incarceration is mass. It affects all different people in society. It affects people who suffer from addiction, that it's easy to get caught up in the system. You know, if you are wealthy and have resources and have a, you know, very stable family, then your addiction will go to, you know, you go to an addiction center, you will not be incarcerated. For other people, it's not, you know, their rock bottom is in the jail cell. And I think I think it shows, though, that imagine being an addict trying to stay clean and then also having these social cascades of suffering, right? Losing your car, losing your home. Those are enough to push people back to addiction, right? So the system itself is so punitive. It exerts, you know, hardships on people that almost make thwart their actual recovery. But I also thought what Michael said was really important, which is this idea of retaliation. One of the key issues that jails and prisons have is that they don't have oversight, is that the rank and file sheriffs are not are basically able to use their discretion as they see fit. That means putting people into solitary that complain. That means giving people, you know, not denying them privileges to go to the law library or denying them privileges to call home. These things can be, you know, deadly in some cases. In Cook County, the jail, there was a man that had, you know, a medical condition, and he wasn't able to sleep on the top bunk, and he had a seizure. The medical team had said, do not put this man on the top bunk. And for some reason, the sheriff's officers thought it would be either funny or would be punitive to put him on that top bunk, and he was paralyzed for life. His entire life was changed. So I want to echo Michael's concern about, you know, the folks protesting in on the inside right now, that is nothing short of a heroic act of bravery, because there will be repercussions in many cases on these men and women who are doing this. It's not forgotten. Even sometimes complaining or asking for medication could be cause for sheriffs to retaliate against an inmate. And even asking to be treated just with that basic level of dignity can be dangerous. You can imagine that a strike would be much more concerning.
We're talking with Nicole Gonzalez-Van Cleve about the current prison strike that's going on across the United States and in some Canadian provinces as well. Let's go back to the phones, and Anne and Amory is up. Hi, Anne.
Hi there. I already spoke with somebody, but I'm on again. That's great, because I have a friend who's been an inmate at Peshitta Correctional Institution in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin now for 18 years, and I have so many horrific stories to share with the public, but it would just take way too long.
Why don't you just give us maybe one story that really kind of illustrates it for us, Anne?
Well, that would be very good to do. What I would like to it's a cascade of things. It's the food has been, the inmates don't prepare the food anymore. It's jobbed out, and the portions are so small, and then they have to work a full day if they're lucky enough to get a job that only pays just a minimal amount of money. And as you explained earlier, $2 a day doesn't even cover what she's getting.
And we're getting a little short on time. I want to ask Nicole, do we see different issues for women who are incarcerated versus men?
You know, for women who are incarcerated, you know, the issue to me is that they often have children. And so many of the decisions they're making on the inside has everything to do with them trying to be great parents on the outside. And imagine how difficult that is, right? So, you know, for, you know, many female inmates, it can be very difficult because guards know how important those visits are with children, and those can be used against them. And so they are very vulnerable to victimization on the inside. And what many people have to remember, too, is if you do go onto the route of the criminal justice system, a lot of times people are victims of trauma. And so we are more able to fault people on the inside and think of them only as defendants, offenders, using those types of terms. We rarely see that a lot of times the failed child care system, child welfare system, school system, you know, many female prisoners have been victimized. And so that is their route. That is their route either to addiction or types of criminal behavior to express that victimization. And so, you know, to me, that is kind of the plight of the female prisoner. It is very difficult. And I can imagine, too, that in striking, they could be even more vulnerable to different types of abuse by prison guards.
Ellen on Facebook wrote saying that access to things like a shower, toilets, and 3 square meals a day should be all taxpayers need to provide. And briefly, because we're getting a little short on time, Nicole, how would you respond to that idea that, you know, prisoners are there for a reason and they should feel like they're being punished?
Right. You know, again, I think it's a balance, because if we talk about, you know, punishment fitting crimes, right, how are we supposed to have a criminal justice system that holds people accountable? The issue, though, is that what we're not seeing is the problem of exploitation, right? And so when we say that we're giving people basic necessities, no, most prisoners have to go to a commissary to get soap and shampoo and other types of supposed luxuries, right? These are just basic things people need to live and stay clean. And so, you know, we have to think about the system as, are we incarcerating people for life after one offense or small offenses, or are we trying to really rehabilitate people so that we will never have them in the system again?
Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Nicole Gonzalez Van Cleve, associate professor at the University of Delaware in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice. She joined us to talk about the current prison strike.
Coming up Monday on Central Time, we look at the idea, while technology can be a good tool for education, arguments can be made against screen learning.
And several Wisconsin counties have referendums on the ballot this fall to gauge public support for both medicinal and recreational marijuana. We'll ask whether you support that or not in your county, and whether there should be a statewide marijuana policy that suits all.